But technically, there is kollel yet for it till the middle of that week. All right, can we begin? Yitzchak, how do you feel? It's good to see you. I needed you last Sunday. We spoke about, you heard this year, we spoke about the chapters. Okay, today is Sunday, the 31st of March, 2019. And even though we're on daylight savings here, somehow the Ribbono Shel Olam is not in agreement with the summertime, and we have a very winter weather. They say it's good for the ground. And I say it's bad for humans, and I can prove it because the Medrash says, Wednesday nights and Friday nights when people didn't walk out of their homes, evidently, they knew it would rain. Halavai, we could have the same system. I just want to respond, first of all, a big hello to those in front of me. I'm happy to see everyone, and a big hello to those listening across the wide expanse of the universe. Some of the correspondence, we got involved with an issue in class when we were speaking about enjoying the work of a Jew on Shabbat, someone does work for us, like turns on the furnace, gives us heat, and he's Jewish, you're allowed to be neneh. And we got involved with something, she'im bo mamish, and the whole question of making a bracha on spices. If we say that something that it's not tangible, it's not really enjoyment, then how do we make a bracha on spices? So Rabbi Simon Jakubowicz wrote to me that it's ain hachinami, that the very question that was asked in class, someone asked me that question, it's a machlekes hapaiskim, whether you do, how do you relate to spices? Is it something you do make a bracha on, or is it something which is not tangible? The only thing is, he gave me the source, Biyur Halacha Simin Reishud Gimel Samach Aleph, and I can't find it. So if Reb Shimon is listening, please send me the source again and we can throw it out intelligibly.
Are we make bracha slices every
Abdallah, of course. No, Halacha L'maisa, we make a bracha. But he claims it's a Machlekes Achreinim. How do you relate the spices? Because after all, the Hana is only, you're breathing something. It's like watching a TV screen. Everything we spoke about, it's intangible in that respect. It's not like food that you put in your mouth and it's mamish, there it is.
But you're getting hangover.
That's the whole question. That's why you do make a bracha, because you are having hanor. But someone asked me in class, and I Taka said, it's an interesting question. I answered what you just answered. But I'd like to see the sources if it is a machlekes achreinim. Okay, a question I threw out many, many months ago, and something I've mentioned all the years, it continues to have a follow-up across the world. And this takes us back to the international dateline again, and the fact that people were afraid to go to Japan because, according to the Guzari, the dateline changes, and which day is really Yom Kippur. Tremendous machloket haposkim, and people were afraid they would have to fast 2 days. And as I heard from my own Rebbe, Reb Chanuch Fishman, and it's been written up in many books, that people in Mir Yeshiva, some people decided to stay behind, not to go, to wait till after Sukkot, and because of that decision, they forfeited their lives, because after Sukkot, you couldn't get out anymore. The German Nazis had taken over, Shem Yerachem. And everyone attributes it to the Chazon Ish Hashita. So if you notice and recall, I got correspondence from across the world that people didn't know of the Chazon Ish yet, that maybe it didn't happen, maybe it's a mistake. So I said, look, I can't be overwhelmed by theories. These ears heard from my own Rebbe, maybe 49, maybe 1950, maybe 1951. I heard from my own Rebbe, Reb Chanuch Fishman, who was a survivor, exactly these words. And I'm not the only one who mentions the Chazon Ish. I heard it from Reb Chanuch, but in all the books that are printed too, it also mentions the Chazon Ish. Okay. So people claim in correspondence with me that the Chazon Ish Hashita only became well known later. So I answered, you mean it wasn't printed until later. But people knew Eretz Yisrael is not that far from Poland, And even before email and faxes, there was still correspondence going back and forth. So my dear Talmud, Menachem Shmayahu Zajak, from a very distinguished Chabad family, and he's been my Talmud many years, so he came up with the theory, maybe it's not the Chazon Ish, it's the Bris Gedayim, Reb Simcha Zelig Riga. And he sent me a copy here of Reb Simcha Zelig's Psak, which was exactly like the Chazon Ish, and was published before this all happened, so that they would have known about it in Poland. So, all right, I have the Psak, here it is, Hagon Reb Simcha Zelig Riga, and Ein HaChinami, the Kuzari, the Chazon Ish. It's everything we spoke about many years ago. Believe me, first thing, Fred...
Elliot,
you had hair when we spoke about it the first time. You and I both had hair. It's many decades ago. But I still say, yes, Reb Simcha Zelig Riga, but Reb Simcha Zelig Riga didn't have the same impact on the Litvish Welt as the Chazon Ish. You have to understand, the Chazon Ish was a shame duffer. He grew up in the Vilna area. He hung around Rav Chaim Moisev Grzynski's Beis Medrash. No one knew who the Chazon Ish was. Then they discovered him. He reached such a level that when Rav Chaim Moisev left Vilna, let's say he had to travel to see the Chafetz Chaim, he left the Chazon Ish in charge of all Psak in Vilna. And you see, even the Rav, who spent some months in Vilna, when he mentioned the Chazon Ish, you could feel the tremendous Derech Eretz. So, Reb Simcha Zelig Riga, Bris Gedayim, had great influence on the Briska, on the Soloveitchik family. But beyond that, if Rakepet mentions Reb Simcha Zelig Riga today in a public lecture, 1 out of 10 will know who he's talking about. If I mention the Chazon Ish, 11 out of 10 will know who I'm talking about. So I still stand, let's not take it away from the Chazon Ish, but I may be right, I may be wrong, but I have a feeling here I'm absolutely right because these years heard it from my dear Rebbe, Reb Henoch Fishman, Zecher Tzadik Livracha. Another issue that came up, and we're involved now in the whole issue of how to deal with Mechalalei Shabbos, how to be Makarav them. The issue we got involved with 2 weeks ago, the Russians inviting them Shabbos, so we spoke about parking lot shuls. So a Talmidah listening, she's a tremendous mind. She was here in class a few weeks, months ago already, Dr. Dale Pianko. So I just got a message from her. I spoke about the shul in Stamford, Connecticut. So I told you, I saw it with my own eyes, the parking lot is open on Shabbat. And cars pull in and cars pull out. It's not like Atlanta, Georgia, where the parking lot is open. And I was there too a few years ago, and I saw cars pulling out, and they told me those cars are the caretakers of the synagogue, that no one really drives anymore. People who started, who drove, became Shomer Torah, Mitzvah, etc. So Dale says she worked in the Stamford synagogue. It's a tremendous Orthodox synagogue. This was Rabbi Joe Ehrenkrantz, if you remember the name. For the last 10 years or more, my student from this kollel, Danny Cohn, is in the shul. So she said in her time, everyone parked in the church parking lot. There was a church right, I recall, right up the block, mamish back to back. And the priest encouraged everyone to park in his parking lot. All right, it could be it was an overflow, but I can tell you today they used the regular parking lot, but I accept the historical insight of someone who saw it with her own eyes and ears. Now, last week we spoke about Reb Moshe Feinstein, we ended off this year, and Reb Moshe was very machmir. I think of all the tshuvot Reb Moshe wrote, Elliot, this was the greatest chumrah Reb Moshe had. To use the words that if you invite someone to your table Friday night, you're not just over lifnei iver, you're a mesit umediach. I'm quoting Reb Moshe. And Rabbi Reuben will pop out and say, mesit umediach is only avodah zarah. So Reb Moshe says, yeah, the punishment is only avodah zarah, but the concept applies to every thing in the Torah, And Vaharaya, he quotes the Gemara dealing with Adam v'Chava, that they had a din of Mesit. She encouraged him to eat of the Nachash, encouraged Chava, he was a Mesit to Chava, eat of the Tree of Knowledge. She encouraged her husband, and the Gemara says they had a din of Mesit, so he said it applies not just to Avodah Zarah. So this is Reb Moshe very extreme.
Where is the source?
We gave it last week. It's Orech Chaim. There are two tshuvas from Reb Moshe. One is Orech Chaim, his first volume. One is Siman Tzadichet, and one is Siman Tzadichet. What's very fascinating is who he wrote the tshuva to. The first one was to the famous Rabbi Aryeh Kaplan. It's about running a minyan for children on Shabbos when you know they're going to drive. The other one is to Rabbi Naftali Kalbach. Rabbi Naftali Kalbach in Detroit. So I asked, who is this Rabbi Naftali Kalbach? So a student sent me the link, and I have all the information on him. Ein Hachinami, I was right, he's part of the greater Kalbach family. He's cousin to Shlomo Kalbach, the one you know. And Naftali Kalbach, it's the same name as Shlomo's father, was also Rabbi Naftali Kalbach. But Rav Shlomo's father wound up on the west side, and this Kalbach came to America. His life was saved by Ne'er Yisrael. Came in the late 30s. Ne'er Yisrael gave him an unquote student immigrant visa. He came to Baltimore, met his wife there, who was also a German immigrant running away from Hitler, and Baltimore placed him in Detroit. He organized a day school in Detroit. He was one of the mainstays of the Kehillah in Detroit. From Detroit, he gave up the rabbinate, came to Borough Park, where he worked as an accountant. And in Borough Park, he organized what's called the Mir Minyan. In Borough Park, you have a Lakewood Minyan, you have a Mir Minyan. He organized the Mir Minyan. In 79, he came in Aliyah to Israel, and he spent this time here, like some of you are doing, just going to Shiurim and just studying Torah. Now, he has a very prominent family. His son, Reb Moshe Kalbach of Yerushalayim, is the author of Chavetzelet Hasharon. It's a collection of volumes on Shas and Paiskim. He has a son, Rabbi Binyamin Kalbach, who everyone should recognize the name. He's one of the sons-in-law of Rabbeinu Shfinkel, the Mira Rosh Yeshiva. Rabbeinu Shfinkel, I think there were four daughters there. Each one married an American Talmud in Mir Yeshiva. One of them I know very well. There's a certain family there that interrelates with people I'm very friendly with, and I happen to know them. Terrific, terrific individuals. And it can go on and on with his yichus. He is no longer alive. I hope his Rebbetzin is still living. Okay, so I just wanted to fill all that in, and I thank my sub-Talmidim for their help. And I want to go further, and I have to tell you in advance today, you'll see what I'm doing. It's a little bit different and very, very fascinating. This question of inviting people on Shabbos to come to shul, to come to your table, to come to your simcha, it's a question that haunts all of us. And Reb Moshe, very extreme, absolutely not. When we dealt with the Mishnah Halachot, the starting point with the Russians coming to his home Friday night, he already had a more liberal attitude to make clear to them they shouldn't come by bus, they shouldn't carry, shouldn't this. If they listen or don't listen, it's not your concern. He seemed to have a more liberal attitude. But now I want to take someone who we all knew and to me one of the greatest role models in my life, and that of course is Reb Aaron Lichtenstein, who I know from 51 on. When I entered the yeshiva, yeshiva was much smaller than any good kid knew everyone in the yeshiva. You know, all the good kids knew each other. You follow me? I entered yeshiva 51, I entered high school, right? 51, I entered TA. But it Reitz was one institution from first year high school through smicha. It was Yeshiva Rabbeinu Yitzchok Hanan. And we knew each other. And my earliest recollections of yeshiva was this tall kid, a good basketball player, and a Gainisha Cup, Reb Aaron, what a mind, what a photographic memory, and what a decent individual, you understand? He was, even in 51 already, we knew that he was different. We looked up to him, you understand? He was a few years ahead of me, but wow, Reb Aaron, loved him. We didn't call him Rabbanon, we called him the Babe. How'd he get the name the Babe? He had a big baby, a big, I have great-grandchildren like that. Big round faces. So in his youth, Rabbanon was like the Babe, you understand? Everyone called, later people, my word of honor, people, I got serious letters that they said, the Dear Rebbe, etc., etc., we'd like to certify that Rav Aaron Lichtenstein was called the Babe because he was like Babe Ruth, one of a kind. I can absolutely guarantee you that Babe Ruth had nothing to do with Rav Aaron's nickname, whatever you want to call it, Kinui, the Babe. If anything, Rav Aaron was a Chicago Cubs fan. His formative years were in Chicago, and Rav Aaron and I can still, we used to talk about the 1945 World Series, where the Cubs win the World Series, and oh, it was what a team that was, and they were decent people, role models. All right, that was 1945. That was Rav Aaron. Now, all of you know, he gave up America. He came to Israel, and what he used to do at the Gush, there would be public sessions. Particularly aimed at the Chutz Laaretz kids who were there, and he would deal with contemporary problems. Now, many of these public sessions were recorded and later published word by word, edited, taken down, transcribed, like the Lubavitcher Rebbe, Reb Aaron, fine. So I'm quoting from something that appeared on a Gush website. This is the talk Reb Aaron gave September 7th, 2012. And we have tried to maintain the original formulations and flavor as much as possible, including original Hebrew and Yiddish phrases. And again, if you grew up in the yeshiva in my time, none of us spoke total English. We always threw in. And in your time, I would imagine there were Hebrew phrases. The Yiddish already was out. But in my time, everything was in Yiddish, so I can understand Reb Aaron's speech very well. The text was not reviewed by Rabbi Lichtenstein, so they always do that because they don't want to embarrass. In other words, it was written up. People ask me if they can write up my Sheyurim, so I always say, try to be accurate. That's my answer. All right. I'm now quoting Reb Aaron word by word, and this is the very question he's dealing with. Sometimes there are situations which are very difficult to resolve. At one time, the question would arrive about Chilul Shabbos. What do you do if someone is not observant of Shabbat? Do you tell him on Shabbat, go to your friends, or keep him in his house? Today, in many instances, other kinds of issues come up. A son who may have started out as a yeshiva man, but the yeshiva is long behind him, and he may feel some connection, and he may think it's nice to bring a girl home for Shabbos. Of course, they don't want two separate bedrooms, a room for him and her. Obviously, there are halachic issues with Ne'iva. There are also human issues. Today, many liberal people don't take this as being a terrible thing. But people of earlier generations, the parents and the grandparents are shocked. So what do you do? Reb Aaron has hit upon a problem here which is absolutely real and tangible. And tell you a story. Gruss has gone through many, it's a long history how many secretaries we've had here. Whatever the reasons are, I can't go into, it's not important now. But Gruss, we once had fabulous secretaries upstairs. Something happened about 15, 16 years ago, and it changed everything on the ground here. These secretaries were fabulous. There was one, Lorraine. Lorraine was not, she was an English girl, grew up here, went to high school here, and her native language was English. She was the most capable secretary I've ever met in my life. She later left. When she left, she went on and she has a gym for women. She's an entrepreneur. She's doing very well, living be well. Not religious. Not religious. English. Maybe the home was kosher, I don't know. She was married to a man who was a direct descendant of the Vilna Gaon or the Vilna Gaon's brother. A big yichus, totally irreligious, worked in air conditioning. And we were very close, and she would confide in me. So one time she tells me her teenage daughter, a little bit older, maybe 18, 19, brought home a boy, and she wants a bedroom with him. And her husband went berserk. You follow? And I told her, I don't understand your husband. We who live by Torah, we have a different concept of sex and relations and sex and holiness. But if your husband is Mechalel Shabbos, I don't understand. How does he expect his daughter? So she goes a step further. And what the Baron's saying here is absolutely true. I can tell you with the outreach, one of the terrible problems they had where they would grab you at the Kotel and an invitation for Shabbos, and the guy says, fine, but I'm bringing my girlfriend along. And they would make a protest if they were put in two different bedrooms. And what do you do? All right, this is a classic question. No easy answer. And you see, Rabarin, because he went to Harvard, he was once asked, there's a famous quote, what did you gain out of Harvard? So Aaron answered that life can be very complex. You understand? I went to Yeshiva College. To me, the answer is, you tell him halacha, the sanctity, man, women, keep separate. But Rabarin says to many liberal people, they don't take this as a terrible thing. You take the New York Times, you take Haaretz, you take Yediot, you take Mariv, you take the newspapers that Yomo's trying to read. I give him credit, he's mastering Hebrew. Very important not to read the Jerusalem Post, that's not Israel. The other papers take you into Israel. So to them, what's wrong? A boy and girl sleeping together? What's wrong? Trump is a very fine individual. He never raped anyone, right or wrong. He slept around with 100. So what? President Clinton? Tzadik Yisod Olam. There was a whole op-ed piece in the New York Times by a Catholic woman that call out a vote to the president. He'll proposition anyone in a skirt. But if she says no, he walks away. This is a mentality that is totally foreign to us who live with Kedusha Vitara. All right, this is one question. Take another example. With regard to Shabbat, which can come up in one of two respects, a lack of synchronization between parents and children. It can be a case where parents who are not observant and the children are Balei Tshuva. Or the reverse. What are you talking about? Parents who are observant and the child is off the derech. What do you do in that situation? Do you invite them for Shabbat or not? And all right, this is one of our great challenges. I cry about it. You see, I can understand someone raised in the Haredi world and he throws it all away, and Meisim B'chol Yom in Satmar in America, they have a terrible problem today. There's a Lakewood too, by the way, the percentage they tell me runs on to 20%, and these are kids who raised properly. But to me, a kid raised, for instance, like my grandchildren were raised, like my children were raised, like my great-grandchildren are being raised, in the Tzioni-Dati world, they get the best education. Open-minded, they go to school, they have a basketball court, they have science, they have computers, that nothing is negative, and yet these kids, you have a certain percentage, throw it away. I met a God here just last week, and the God looks at me, and he says, I'll say it in English, are you related to the Samuel family? I say, yeah, that's my daughter, my grandchildren. Piskatzev? I say, Ken, Piskatzev Mizrach. I heard you speak at Golan's engagement party. He's my grandson, married, Golan married Shani. And I'm looking at this kid, he's evidently friendly with my grandson. He's sitting there without a kippah, a blazing cup, head on. So I came down later that day, and I said to him, what's your name? I'll send my grandson. I said, you don't have to send. I already emailed him that I've met his grandfather. So I asked him, how do you know my grandson? He says, we learned together in Itama, in the yeshiva in Itama. No, we're not talking a Haredi yeshiva. We're talking Yehuda Vishomran. We're talking a kid who got the best pinach in the world. And here he's sitting in Yeshiva Shabbos Kol Chanan without a yarmulke on his head. All right, but we got to be honest. So you see, Rav Aaron is absolutely right. There's a double factor here. You have parents, kids become Balei Tshuva. The parents are Mechalalei Shabbos, Ochlein Levelet and Treifot. You know how many shilas I have had over the generations that I'm privileged to teach Torah, where children came to me, what do we eat in our parents' home? You talk about BMT, Elliot, BMT, Gold, Michlala, the Foreign Students Program. Real questions. A kid goes home for Pesach, and imagine he has to eat in a house where he can't depend upon the kashrut all year, and certainly for Pesach. And these are my symbol chol yom. What do you do? Remember the question I told you that they took the kid to the Rav. His father is a Reform rabbi. Kid is going home for Yontif. Father is a Reform rabbi. And he doesn't know what to do. There's no shul within walking distance. I mean, this is a question. Where do you ever dream of questions like this? By the way, his home was kosher. Kashrut was not the problem. But so they took the kid to the Rav. And this was classic Mori Rebbe, Rav Soloveitchik. Word by word, I heard the story from Rabbi Finkelstein, who was principal, took the kid, made an appointment. The Rav says, you respect your father? He's paying your tuition. You only can go to yeshiva because of your parents. You will not embarrass him. You'll daven at home, and then you'll go with your father to the temple, and you'll sit there. You can read Tehillim. Don't let people see that you're not praying. Stand up when they stand up. Sit down when they sit down. This was the rub. But whoever heard of shilas like this? So you see, it runs. Now, what about Shabbat? The kid is dying lekarei of his parents. You know how many students I've taught, I later met their parents, and the parents told me our children made us from, our children brought us to Yiddishkeit. I mean, this is Meisen B'chol Yom. This is a generation where I believe the percentages of the Balei Tshuva is much higher than those that fall away. I hope I'm not wrong. I know I was inspired over Shabbos. I showed my grandson yesterday. I said, show it to everyone in the family. If you read Yediot in the magazine, the story about the top woman basketball player in the basketball league. She's 23 years of age, just scored in her final game a record for a woman, 26 points, which would be good for me or you, Dov, as well. And she's a Bala Tshuva. She the whole article, and she told how she a typical story, it's exactly the Uri Zohar story, that she was raised here, educated here, and of course doesn't know a thing about Yiddishkeit. I had Shabbos, someone came to me, there was a delegation of high school kids in Scarsdale, the Yisrael of Scarsdale, and his sister lives there, and she was flabbergasted, Israeli kids who know Hebrew inside out, didn't know how to open a siddur, didn't know how to make a bracha on the Torah. How should they know? They got a total education with no Yiddishkeit in it whatsoever. So this girl wound up in Chicago, Northwestern University, and she had relatives in Chicago. And she went to see her relatives, and she saw kashrut, Shabbat. Her whole life changed. So you see, there are Balei Tshuva. But what do you do now? Do you invite your parents for Shabbos? They're going to drive. What about parents who, lo aleinu, gave the kids the best education? And the kids are Mechalalei Shabbos. So the parents want to invite the kids Friday night. They want to keep a connection. No, the kids are going to drive. All right, they'll come before Shabbos. But they're going to drive back if Shabbos this week. I davened early, but if you didn't daven early, they drove back at 10 o'clock at night. Now, 10 o'clock at night, l'fichol ha-deyot, even shitat Rabbeinu Tam, it's Shabbos. Terrible, terrible question. So listen to what Rav Aaron says. A close friend of our family has a son who, despite a yeshiva education, became totally fry. And he has two children who barely know that they're Jewish. For years, this woman would not invite the son for Shabbat because he would drive home Friday night. So she was concerned at the gut level about Lifnei Iver, and she didn't invite him. All right, this is, I'd say it's not Lifnei Iver, it's the gut level. What troubles me is, are we Torah Jews or conservative Jews? We invite people to drive, so are we any different? Read Rakefet's book, Washington, his big debate with Rabbi Dr. Theodore Friedman. I destroyed Teddy Friedman before 800 people. Do you drive to Shul Shabbos? Of course not. But you have a parking lot. What are we, Catholics? I call them a Catholic rabbi. Priests have one religion and the populace has another? We all have the same religion. If you don't drive, how come they can drive? No, if we're inviting kids, we're inviting people to shul, what are we saying? You can drive, we're looking the other way. I mean, I can understand the gut feeling very well, but this poor woman and this description, you give a kid, I can give you examples of this 100 times over. Lo aleinu, you can give a kid the finest education, an open education, he can have decent rebbeim, and he throws it all away, kol haTorah kula, he's bigger than God, he's, don't have to go further, okay? Yomo, where are you? Be aware that Shvitami benefited greatly from that Jew in Manchester, London, who threw away kol haTorah kula at 30, and at 40, someone told him, listen to a guy named Rakefet, and you heard the story in the Kolil. He spoke 10 years ago, if you were here. But you are surviving and living and smiling because of what happened on YU Torah. But good chinuch threw it all away. At some point, it began to pain her, and she spoke to me. I said to her, this is now Rabbanan, listen, I'll tell you what Rav Shlomo Zalman would tell you if you went to ask him. Rav Shlomo Zalman Orba, remember who we're talking about. Elliot, what you don't know is that Rabbanan had one Rebbe in America, knew giving the name of his Rebbe, Mori Rebbe Rav Soloveitchik, his father-in-law. When he came in Aliyah, he had another Rebbe, Rav Shlomo Zalman Orba. You want a proof? Originally, Rabbanan observed in America, when he went back for Shavuot the first time, 2 full days in America, 1 day here. People came to me, is he living here or not living here? I said, he's living here, but that's the Rav's psak. Later in life, Rav Shlomo Zalman's psak. 1 day, even there 1 day. All right, you put on tefillin the second day, but b'seita, safek d'oraita. But Rav Shlomo Zalman's psak, not the Rav. You know what Rav Shlomo would tell you? He would tell you to invite them for Friday and to tell them you are they are invited without telling them that you expect them to leave Friday night. But you are not fooling yourself or anyone else. You know they will drive home. But the choice is, and it is a cruel choice, between having them lead a totally secular life without any window upon Yahadut, and then you kept your hands clean, but your children's hands are much dirtier. Or do you, in a sense, lend a hand to this Chilul Shabbat? Rav Shlomo Zalman's psak was, invite them, give them an option to stay for the whole of Shabbat. Don't pressure them. And when they leave, they leave. It is better than nothing. When I told her this, she was overjoyed. She thanked me. She didn't know what to do for me. I told her, it's not my psak. It's the great Reb Shlomo Zalman Orbach's psak. So, yeah, this is Rabbi Lichtenstein. This is a gonadir. This is a tzaddik. You have to understand. Rabban was Rabban already at a young age. If this is not someone who became a Johnny come lately. We sat in the same shir. Yitzchak and I sat in the same shir with Rabban. He was the Rav's assistant. The Rav sat here. Rabban sat against the wall right there. I happened to sit right here. My Gemara was right on the desk. I blocked the Rav. Sat right here. So, and we have a picture of it. You don't have to believe a word I'm saying. A picture, I trust, doesn't lie out of 1960. Today, a picture means nothing because they can Photoshop it. But then the Rav would get frustrated. No, what am I going to the source? And none of us dummies knew what to answer him. And he would say, no, Aaron. And he would look at Rav Aaron, and Aaron would shoot at him. It was unbelievable, the man's knowledge as a kid. So, and here's Rav Aaron. He quotes Rav Shlomo Zalman, obviously agrees with Rav Shlomo Zalman, and he tells you, invite them, better than nothing. It's a terrible choice. It's a complex issue to quote Rav Aaron, but this is what he paskins lahalacha. Now, he goes further in this talk. In America today, for example, ein bayit asher ein shem met. There is hardly a family where at some point, to some degree, someone is not following what the parents would want. We're talking religiously. I have to tell you, as a parent, as a grandparent, as a great-grandparent, one of the basic lessons you learn in life or you fail is that you cannot clone children or grandchildren. You always have to allow freedom of choice. And that's a lesson I learned at a very early stage in life, and I thank the Ribbono Shel Olam for teaching me that lesson, because I was able to apply it child-wise, grandchild-wise, and Baruch Hashem, it worked out very well. But ain't by the shame shemait. You think of America, think of the families you know. All right, there's a lot to be proud, and inevitably, there's some heartache. I went to the Rav once with regard to a relative of mine where a daughter had gone off the derech, and her parents had a question as to whether they should try to work out a compromise to give up Shabbat for kashrut, to work out such a deal. Do you understand what we're talking about? This girl is totally irreligious. So the parents would make a deal with her, look, we won't say a word, you machalel at Shabbos, but at least keep kosher. Give us a word, you'll keep kosher. I have a feeling I know who the Rav Aaron's talking about, but it's not important now. Well, girl, fine. One of the parents was in favor, and the other was in favor of trying to fight an all-out battle to maintain the whole front. The one parent, all right, will make the compromise as much as it hurts. The other parent, untvida'a, all or nothing. You don't compromise on Shabbat. All right. I was in Boston at the time going to school. He means he was in Harvard. And they called me and asked me to speak to the Rav about it. I went to speak to the Rav and explained the situation. We called the parents. I was sitting right next to him when he spoke to the parents. And his response was, Halacha lo kedivrei ma v'lo kedivrei ma. Don't try to fight the whole front, and don't try to fight half the front. Don't fight. And you see, the Rav's approach, fighting will get you nowhere. You have to ride with the waves. Medafah b'mazel. Everyone asks my wife, how did you raise such nice daughters? So my wife always says, prayer and mazel. You have to pray to the Ribbono Shel Olam, and you have to have mazel. You can be the finest parents in the world, but you may not succeed with all your children. There are other forces in life. We're living in a world, you got to remember, there's no religion in this world. Today, religion is gone. I was in Italy a few days ago. You all know, wherever you go in Italy, you see beautiful churches. In all our travels in Italy, I saw one nun and one monk was wearing not a priest, a monk, part of an order. That's all I saw. With all our travels in Italy, we saw endless Islamic families walking with children when you didn't see any other children. It's an amazing world. There are no children today. I don't know. You buy them in a store, or you don't have children, or you don't buy children at all, but you don't see pregnant women. It's not Yerushalayim. Get on a bus in Yerushalayim. Get on a light rail. Even though I'm over 80, I jump up if I see a pregnant woman to give her my seat. But what the Rav answered here, this is Mori Rebbe exactly the way he would speak. Nishtazeh or nishtazeh. Calm. Friendship. You can't force. You're going to make a deal. It's not going to hold out. It's not going to be real. And then Rav Aaron goes further. And this takes me into some of my greatest moments with the Rav. He told the following story, which I put into print on several occasions. When the Rav was in Eretz Yisrael in 1935, he went to visit a number of places. He came to a Fraya kibbutz, Rabbi Aaron used the word fry, where some of my mother-in-law's relatives lived. Incidentally, Rabbi David Lipschitz also had close relatives who came out of Eastern Europe, totally fry, and he insisted on maintaining a close, warm relationship with them. And I can add to what Rabbi Aaron just said, for your edification, the great Reb Shimon Shkop, Rosh Yeshiva of Grodno, his granddaughter was the head of the Communist Party in the state of Israel. Are you aware of that or not? Shulamit alone. It's beyond what? That was his granddaughter. He had relatives, Gedolei Yisrael, but they wound up in America, Reb Zelig Epstein. There was a Shkup in Chicago, a Shkup who taught in YU, in the BTA, and in the Central Yeshiva for Girls. But the one here in Israel was the head of the Communist Party. To return to the earlier story, they sit down. That's talking about the Rav now, 35, the host, the relative, and they put some food on the table. Naturally, the Rav couldn't eat. Out of concern, there were probably problems of Tevel, Trumat and Maisrat. The man turns around and says to the Rav, I know why you don't want to eat. You're afraid of the Kashrut, but you should know that our kitchen is absolutely kosher. The Rav was absolutely thunderstruck. How did you come to that? The man told the Rav the following story. And no, you've all heard the Rav. I heard the Rav with my own ears tell the story. Evidently, Rav Aaron is quoting from the same talk. Rav Cook once came to the kibbutz for Shabbat. You know, we're talking about over 100 years ago. Rav Cook with Rav Chaim Yosef Zonnenfeld with some other Rabbanim decided to tour all the kibbutzim in Israel to impress them to become more religious. Naturally, he couldn't eat their food. So Rav Cook brought his own food and sat with them in the dining room Friday night, Shabbos morning, same thing for Suda Shlishit. He came and ate with them. He's eating his food and they're eating their food. Moitzai Shabbos, they had a kumsitz with a bonfire and he sits with them. Sunday morning, he's about to leave. And he says, thank you very much. It was very nice to spend Shabbat with you. I hope that the next time I come, I'll be able to eat your food. They were machshir the kitchen. I'm not telling you that in that case I discussed with the Rav what happened. But this relative of mine has kept a strictly kosher kitchen for years. And I eat there. So in many families, there is something that has gone amiss, but you still don't break off your relationship with them. Now, the story I just told you, No, does anyone recognize the story? Became a source of great controversy a number of years ago. The Rav told the story, and in telling the story, he described Rav Kook. And he said about Rav Kook, I met him, but I met him on his deathbed. Rav met him in 35. It was in Rav Kook's final months, final weeks. Obviously, they didn't get a chance to talk and learn him. But the Rav said, I don't know how great a gadol he was, but one thing I can tell you, he had a religious personality that influenced other people. And this was the story he told, among others, of the Rav's great influence. So when David Holzer wrote the book on the Rav, with all that the Rav told him, the Rav thinking aloud, so David in the original edition made a comment that Rav Kook perhaps was not a great Lamdan, but he was a great religious personality. That caused a tremendous outcry, because Rav Kook was a gone idea. The Rav simply stated, I didn't talk with him in learning, but I can tell you what happened, the story on the kibbutz. In the second edition of the Rav Thinking Aloud, it's revised, and Rabbi David Holzer, my dear David, took out the original comment about Rav Kook. But this is the story. And what do you see from here? You get a lot further with honey than with vinegar. And this is crucially important. And Rabbi Aaron is totally, he understands the entire problem. And he says, the temptation to bar all the doors, to avoid any possible contact with things we don't approve of, listen carefully to these words, because we're going to see total contradiction in a tshuva later today or next week, Be'ezrat Hashem. So much is dependent upon the variables. One of the variables needs to be the flexibility which you approach this. You can be Bismarck in your home, but first of all, I don't want to be Bismarck. Even it has nothing to do with Yiddishkeit. Secondly, it is not the best way to increase desire on the part of the child to be what the father wants him to be. The Sifri says, V'ahavta et Hashem Elokecha, we think that Ahava means that you should love. But the Sifri says it's not that you should love, but you should engender love. You should make people want to love the Ribbono Shel Olam, as Avraham Avinu did. Ohavai, Avraham Ohavai. And this is the counsel which is offered vis-a-vis the general world. With regard to your own home, Alacha Kama V'Kama. In every case in which someone goes off the derech, it is a tragedy for the parent. There is partially a way back. I mentioned this relative of mine before. She has come a long way. She davens in a conservative temple, etc. Much better than it could have been, and much better than it was. But it's not what the rest of the family wanted. And he ends off the talk. I know this family too, actually taught part of the family, Machon Gold. I have quoted this episode a number of occasions. In 1973, we met a person in Yerushalayim while watching the military parade on Yom HaTzmut. 1973 was the last year of the military parade. You know what I'm talking about? Every year, I saw the parade in 70, 71, 72, 73. This is the famous story. Rabbi Gusman went to watch the parade. It was on Karanei Yesod. It came down around the old city walls. And they asked Rabbi Gusman, says Beitel Torah, you know, the Americans moving right wing. And Rabbi Gusman answered, for someone who saw Jewish children being killed by the Nazis, it's the greatest joy for me to see the youth we have in Israel, Tzva Hagana Yisrael. That was a classic Rabbi Gustman answer. So Rabbi Aaron, at this parade, met this man from Cardiff, Wales, which is not exactly Belushin, nor Yerushalayim, and not Mnei Brak. And as we talked to him, it turns out that this man raised a family in Cardiff, Wales. All his grandchildren are from. The boys came to learn in Yeshiva in Eretz Yisrael. I went over and asked him, Mr. Cohn, gives his name, that's the name of the family. In Cardiff, Wales, how were you able to raise such a family? He said to me, in order to raise children properly, you need two things. You need seichel, and you have to have siyata d'shamaya. In order to have seichel, for that you also need siyata d'shamaya. That remained in my memory, and I think it was a very wise insight that he had. So, my dear students, this is Reb Aaron Lichtenstein. This is classic. Anyone who knew Reb Aaron, this is the way he spoke, his attitude, his family, the Rav, Mr. Cohn in Cardiff, Mintafab Mseichel, and in order to have Siyata D'Shmaya, you also need Seichel. Very powerful, very correct, certainly at total odds with Reb Moshe Feinstein. And this would make me feel better, opening a shul in Maplewood, South Orange, dependent upon the doctor who opened it, his patients owing him a favor, driving the shul to help make a minyan. So in retrospect, it wasn't a terrible thing. We got a shul started, a shul has to begin, a shul needs a minyan. Today, Baruch Hashem, Maplewood, South Orange, there's an Erev, there's a lot more than a Shomer Shabbos minyan. As a matter of fact, the shul that we began in a converted house and then we built on an extension, it was such a great moment. Today, they took over the church a few blocks up the road on Parker Avenue. I can still see the church. Today, it's the shul. And the shul is a dormitory. There's a Chabad yeshiva. It's a Chabad alive and kicking. And Maplewood, South Orange on the map. Okay? At Conrad Baruch Lichtenstein. All right, now we're moving sideways. And I'm breaking with this very question. And I'm going to go on to a medley, an overture of questions. You'll understand next week where I'm leading to and why. And we'll come back to the question inviting for Shabbos. And I want to travel to Har Nof. Well, you all know Har Nof, interesting area with my own eyes and ears. It began in the early 1980s as a new part of Jerusalem, open to everyone, religious and irreligious. And an amazing thing happened in Har Nof. One of the original Kablanim who built it, is no longer alive, was a real Chevraman, and he would only sell to religious Jews. So little by little, people are coming into Har Nof. At first it was 70% religious, then it's 80% religious, and then it reaches 85%, and people feel very awkward driving on Shabbos, so the Chiloniyim move out, and Har Nof becomes a total frum area. It never, ever had an official statement, you can't drive a car on Shabbos. It didn't have to, because ultimately the whole area is 100% frum. It becomes the bastion of Shas. Rabbi Avadia Yosef lives there, and the Boston Rebbe lives there, right or wrong. There's a big Tzioni Dati shul. Rabbi, what's the last name? He's very big. Fürstein, do I have it right?
No,
Shalom Gold lives there, but even before Shalom Gold, down the hill was another shul, very big in Soha today, one after another. But there's one name no one has written as many, Svarim Halacha Lamaisa, quoted all over, a very interesting individual. Moshe mentioned the name. Your first name, Rav Moshe Sternbach. Now, you don't come up with more interesting individuals than Rav Moshe Sternbach. Born in 1928, where was he born? London, his native language is English. The first language maybe in his house, they spoke Yiddish, Spesichnisch, born to a Frum family, father well-to-do, a businessman, 9 children, and his father very involved in the Torah community. And over the years, whenever Gedolei Yisrael visited England to raise funds, to raise money, they would be guests in his home, so he was exposed at an early age to Gedolei Yisrael. Now, this kid grows up in England. He studies in Stamford Hill. He studies, I know all these names, Reb Moshe Schneider, Reb Tzal Rakov. He becomes the Gateshead Rav. His chaver when he studies is Reb Yitzchak Tuvia Weiss. No, who is Reb Yitzchak Tuvia Weiss today? Av Beitin of the Eid HaRedit. That was his chaver. Another chaver was Paul Reichman. That's already from the Reichman family that winds up in Toronto and Yerushalayim. Not a poor family. And you might think, you know, with all this background, he and Rav Weiss, the most extreme in the crowd. His Rebbeim were much more broad, and much more to a certain degree liberal in Hashkafa. During World War II, the family runs away to avoid the Blitz. They move to a small village, and he shares a room with someone who becomes a great influence in his life, Reb Eliyahu Eliezer Dessler. You're talking about Reb Dessler, the Michtav Me Eliyahu, who later in his years comes here, B'nai Brak, the Mashkiach. What an individual. And a miracle happens. His mother is very anxious to get him out of Britain, the Blitz, and she arranges safe passage for him to go to the United States. But she didn't know what to do. This is a bright kid, he's a youngster, he's barely bar mitzvah, and should she send him alone? They have distant relatives in the States, but who knows what the atmosphere he'll meet there. And she goes to Rebbe Yalopin, the famous mashgiach of the Eitz Chaim Yeshiva in London. Rebbe Yalopin, who later comes to Aliyah, actually met him, knew him. These were giants, giants of Torah and the Muslim movement. And she asked Rebbe Yalopin what to do. And he doesn't know what to answer. He says, I have to do a Goral Hagra. Now, in order to do a Goral Hagra, you know what I'm talking about, right? Where you have to be fasting. This is not a simple matter. This is fasting, and you just can't do it. And something happened that he couldn't fast that day, and he didn't do the Goral, and he couldn't give an answer, and the boat left with 300 children on the boat, and the boat was sunk by the Germans. Had he been on the boat, he would have never survived, and Moshe would not be able to quote the name Rabbi Moshe Sternbuch. That was the last boat that was able to sail out of England. Afterwards, the war was such that nothing could be done. Now, Reb Moshe Sternbuch later becomes a Rav for many years in South Africa, in Johannesburg, South Africa. He studies in Israel after World War II. He studies here, very friendly with the Chazon Ish, very friendly with the Brisker Rav, and very friendly with the Chabina Rav, Rav Dov Beresh Wiedenfeld. We're talking about the three greatest Torah scholars in the non-Mizrahi world. The Mizrahi world had giants too, but these were the great, great Rabbanim in Israel. Then he goes to Johannesburg, South Africa, and later in life he comes back to Israel, and here you have a man who's well into his 90s today, and Reb Moshe Sternbuch.
According to your numbers,
it'd
be like
91, 92, Mashu Hukazeh, and very highly respected. He is involved with the Eidah, very interesting, his positions, involved with the Eidah Haredit, more than involved with the Eidah Haredit, identifies with Satmar, actually went to America to be part of the Satmar demonstration. It's a few months ago, it's in this last year, tremendous demonstration against Israel and the army and trying to force the Yeshiva boys into the army, etc., etc. Very fascinating individual. His most famous work is Moadim Uzmanim, which is a halachic work on all the halacha dealing with Yontif. In addition, Tshuvot V'Hanhagot, which were collected from endless answers that he answered halacha l'maisa over the decades, questions, burning issues that came his way. Very fascinating, multifaceted individual. It's very hard to guess in advance how he'll paskin. I once had a tremendous advantage from Reb Moshe Sternberg and Hanov. Can anyone guess why? Because I had to go to America, and it was Purim, and it's in Yerushalayim, and I'm getting on a plane that night, and where do I hear Kriyat Megillah? Yerushalayim, no one reads the Megillah Yud Dalet night. Reb Moshe Sternberg and Hanov has a special Megillah reading because he's Chayshish that in Hanov there's not continuity, it's not part of the heart of Yerushalayim, you don't see the old city. Whatever his reasons are, it's a suffix. And you have to read it both on Yud Dalet and both on Tetvav. And that's where I picked up the Megillah reading, Leil Yud Dalet, and the next morning I heard it in New York. Now, I'm quoting from what I just referred to, Sheila to Tshuvot, Tshuvot V'Han Hagot, Chelek Rishon. Reb Moshe Sternberg, what I'm quoting from the first volume published in 1992. And I'm going to be quoting a medley of Tshuvot, one after another, each one intervolved with the next one, and the questions, unbelievable. The first question says it all. How should a Baal Tshuva, I'm quoting Siman Shin Nun Aleph, Orachayim Chelek Aleph, Tshuvot V'Hanagot, Reb Moshe Sternberg, Siman Shin Nun Aleph. Ach, a Baal Tshuva. And what are your relations with your parents? What are your relations with your family? More than that, what does a Baal Tshuva mean? No. We have a tradition, you find traces of it in Shas and Paiskim. You certainly find this in the Kabbalistic literature. You want to be a Baal Tshuva? Tshuva Tamishkav. Who knows what I'm talking about? You have to pay a heavy price to be a Baal Tshuva. You were Mechalel Shabbos. You ate every non-kosher type of food. This famous Noda B'Yehuda that I quoted years ago. You know what I'm talking about, the Noda B'Yehuda? The Noda was a great Talmud Chacham who lived in his in-law's home. And he had an affair with his mother-in-law. Right or wrong? And the tremendous question later, after 2 years, he wants to do tshuva. Should he tell his father-in-law? How do you do tshuva? What's tshuva tamishkal? Sit in the ice. For the pleasure you enjoyed, pay a price of physical punishment. All right, very interesting question. So he speaks about, yes, there's nothing greater than a Baal tshuva. And he quotes the Rambam, Perek Zayin, Hilchat Tshuva, Halacha Vav, Emesh Chayezeh Sanui Lefnei HaMokam Mishukat V'Muruchat V'Toeva V'Ayom Hu Ahuv V'Nechmad Karov V'Yedidi. And yes, absolutely. Someone who's about Tshuva, you take a look at this girl, this beautiful article. I was very impressed with her. She knows. This is not the, this is a Litvish Baal Tshuva. It's not just emotion. So yes, here you have someone who totally knew nothing of Yiddishkeit, and today she's close to the Ribbono Shel Olam, and the Rambam, of course, quotes the halacha, you're not allowed to mention the Baal Tshuva. You know, some people in the Haredi world, this is a tremendous problem, you should know. The Baal Tshuva today and the Haredi world are a unit unto themselves, basically. And of course, a lot of questions in the Haredi world because in the Haredi world, they look down upon a Baal Teshuva. You don't have yichus, you can't get a good shidduch. I can tell you a story, I can illustrate it very simply. One of the people I was closest with in Russia, and Malk and I have a mitzvah of pigeon shvuyim certified by the Mossad. We got this family out of Russia. I don't have to waste details. The new book, the next book coming out, Be'ezrat Hashem, will give you all the details and the documents, etc., etc. So we accomplished something. Dov, how many people do you know that have a mitzvah of pigeon shvuyim? No? Baruch Hashem, my wife too. My wife too. All right, it's a big mitzvah. Oh boy, is it a big mitzvah. So this guy gets out. And he is anti-Hasidus. He comes from Vilna, and his name is Eliyahu. And he won't sing Mashiach, Mashiach, Mashiach. He refused, I can still remember, refused to sing it. Because the Chabadnikim sing it. You never saw anything like it. No, the Ribbono Shel Olam has a sense of humor. And I'm at the engagement of his daughter. And a Gera Chasid. Oh my gosh, my life, Elliot, the Rebbe doesn't make anything up. I don't have to. My life has been very interesting. When the Khatan comes into the room, he's shaking, shaking. Why is he shaking? There are women in the room. Gera, Friday night. Have you ever been in a Gera home? Chaim. In a Gera home Friday night, two separate rooms. Absolutely. Men there, women there. All right. It's against an open Mishnah, Ketubah. Man has to eat with, you have to eat with your wife Friday night, but okay, what can you do? They're smarter than the Mishnah. God is shaking. Shaking, excuse me? Gare is famous for it. Slonim, okay? All right. So I asked a simple question behind everyone's back. A Gera Chassid is marrying a girl who's a Balak Shuvah? Fuskate on? How can this be? Oh, I got the answer. Here is this Gera Chassid. And Eret Azak is Shmakin Gera Yiddish. Nishta Litvish Yiddish, but a Gera Chassidic Yiddish. Perfect Yiddish. Yitzchak, he was born a Gera Chassid like you were born a Chinese coolie. Get it? What's the story? Oh, I'm getting new blood into my family. I'll be able to make an announcement soon. Getting Egyptian Jewish blood. He's an Egyptian. He was kicked out of Egypt 1956. Remember the Sinai campaign? He went to England, a teenager. This is the true story. It's unbelievable. A teenager. No? He went to live where the Jews live, Stamford Hill. Who was his next door neighbor? A Gera Chassidic family. They took this kid in. He was 16, 17. And he became so integrated that you couldn't tell the difference between him and a Polish Gera Chassid. His whole world became Ger. And they came in Aliyah, all right, but he's an Egyptian. Thus passed for a Baal Teshuva, you follow me? So, unbelievable. You're not allowed to tell a Baal Teshuva you were Machalo Shabbos, you were from the Treifich, you were Bilat HaSlurot. Absolutely not. Oh, and then he raises the issue of the Tshuvat HaMishkal. And here he's very powerful, and in my simple opinion, is totally correct. Tshuvat HaMishkal, you can talk about 1,000 years ago, perhaps. You can talk about in the ghetto, the Noda Behuda had to deal with it, with the question I mentioned, because everyone was from. And if you broke with religion, you were really a moreh b'malchut. You were really rebelling against God, rebelling against Torah. Nowadays, we all are tinokot shenishpa'u, who grew up in a hermetically sealed environment. Impossible. Everyone is exposed to the outside world. Everyone is exposed to Western civilization. This one more, this one less. But even a kid in Meir Sharim walks a few blocks out of the way and he sees a store with movies, with videos, he sees advertisements. It's a big world out there. He walks to Machne Yehuda every night. Mohulavim, Dagansanach, Machni Yehudi. I have no idea how Agudat Yisrael would love to shut down Machni Yehudi. The whole situation, when Eliot studied here, Machni Yehudi was for fruit and vegetables. Today, Machni Yehudi is for fruit and vegetables, for entertainment, for the best restaurants. You can get, there's ice cream, yogurt there, opened up by an American family. It's unbelievable what's going on in Machni Yehuda. No, a kid walks 4 blocks from Geula to Machni Yehuda. He's exposed to a tremendous world. Long-haired guys, men, women, transsexuites, whatever they call them, all these names today. It's a different world. So today, if someone's a Baal Tshuva, you certainly don't punish him for what he did before he came to Yiddishkeit. We all have a status of Tinokat Shenish Ba'u. And Rav Moshe Sternbach says very beautifully that Ha'ikar for the Balei Tshuva, Lifol, he has to work himself, She'yagziru Acherim B'Tshuva, V'yomidu Poshim Darkei Hashem. And your attitude bring everyone else back, like Uri Zoha, like this lady who spoke, like the whole outreach program in Israel. You know, the one of the big outreach programs here, how it began. You know the story. It's a true story. It's been told and retold. I heard him tell the story himself. This man was a businessman, doing very well, North Tel Aviv and all that goes with it. And one time, a kid came to him, did you put on tefillin today? And he laughed at the kid. And then he remembered that he was told that his grandfather gave his life to not to throw tefillin on the floor when the Nazis requested it in the death camp. Grandfather gave his life not to disgrace the tefillin. He put on tefillin, and as they say, the rest is history. He's one of the big supporters of one of the outreach programs in Israel. He's very good. He's very powerful here. Then he goes a step further. How do you relate to your family? And here, this is Rav Moshe Sternbach. You see, you can see the influence of South Africa upon him. He says, "V'yein lebal tshuva hitrachek legamrei mimishpachto." No, don't completely cut yourself off from your family. And he says, "Tsei ulamad me yitro." Learn from Jethro. Shemoshe Rabbeinu said to him, L'chai manu v'heitivtafnu l'cha, come with us, we'll be good to you, we're inheriting the land, you'll have a share. And Yitro answers, Lo eilech, ki melatzi v'yim moladati eilech. And Chazal say, Eilech l'gayorum, that I have to go and convert my family, I can't leave them. And Rav Moshe Sternbach says, it's not Mechuyev. They're non-Jews. Whoever said you have to go to non-Jews and convert them. But no, he didn't want to leave his family, even though Moshe Rabbeinu promised him so much good. Alacha tama v'kamar afodi yori v'kol shekein mishpachto shehem yehudim hametzuvim b'chol ha-torah shalav ha-chova tvei lekarvam ulahashpi aleichem Torah mitzvot af al pi sheyispol b'zeh charafot u'gidifem. His insight here is beautiful. Alacha tama v'kamar, you have to go and influence Jews who are obligated in Torah mitzvot. And this is the fabulous example of Uri Zoha. And I say it time and again. He came to Yiddishkeit mid-age, well into his 30s, maybe early 40s. And his wife, she had a terrible shock. She married the famous entertainer, a wise aleck, and she made the decision to go along with him. More than that, his teenage children went along with him. And they're frumer today than the son who was born afterwards when they're already balei tshuva. It's interesting. He's also a Hashem Atonement, but he's already on a more popular level. They went along with it. And Arik, and he reached out. And Arik Einstein, you got to remember, is the heart of Israel entertainment. Arik Einstein, he laughed at him. He mocked him. He wrote a song, "My partner, my best friend, Keilu is dead, hu chazah b'tshuva." But you see, he reached out. Arik Einstein's wife, Alona, chazra b'tshuva, unbelievable. She's no longer alive, became a tzaddeket yesod olam. And that's the famous story. We saw it on television, we read it in every newspaper, that when the gates of Russia opened, when the gates of the Soviet Union opened, and the flood of immigrants came, there was an old man who came from Riga, and she went to greet him at the boat, at the plane, at Ben Gurion. And everyone asked her, Alona, she's a world personality, world class. They divorced. Arik, they got divorced. She went to live in Bnei Brak. She organized the big gemach for kallahs to help people get married. And they asked her, what are you doing greeting this old man? And she told the story that she was born in Riga. And when she left Riga to come to Israel in the late 30s to get away from Hitler, this old man was a youngster, was a friend of the family. It's a Chabadnik. Chabad was very big in Riga. The sixth Rebbe lived there when he was expelled from Russia, as you know, 1927, until he went later to Poland from Riga, to Warsaw, and lived there for a good, I imagine, 10 years. And this old man, young man at the time, said to her, "Gedenkst du bist a yiddische Tochter. Vergesst das nicht. Remember, you're a Jewish daughter. Don't forget it. No matter what the environment will be that you'll be raised in Palestine." And she came to greet him and said, "Ich hab nicht vergessen. Ich bin a jüdische Tochter." Very moving story. So you see, he's very right here that you become balei tshuva, don't cut off the relationship with the family. They're Jews. We have to be makar of them. And at times, he hits the nail on the head. It's not easy. Because they look at you like you're crazy. You have to understand, people don't know what Yiddishkeit is, the concept of halacha, the concept of surrender. They look at you like you're crazy. I can give you a classic story that I know. Not many people know this.
What happened to the husband of Alona?
Arik Einstein remained Arik Einstein. I think he remarried a second time. And nothing, he never became frum. If you know the story, I can tell you further. Two of his children married two of Uri Zohar's children. A son married a daughter married a son. And they have endless, he and Uri Zohar share many grandchildren who are totally shomrei Torah and mitzvah. You follow? And everyone in the family, Uri Zohar, his wife, Alona Einstein, and Arik Einstein remained who he remained, could never understand what Yiddishkeit is about. And this is absolutely true. People have no concept of halacha. These are tinok shenishbu. I can tell you the story. I was just speaking. My grandson came to introduce me to the girl he's going with on Shabbos. So he's got involved about Meir Kahana. Everyone asked me about Meir Kahana. All right. There are not many people alive who knew Meir Kahana, Shlomo Kalbach, Gedoli Yisrael, the Rav, Rav Moshe Feinstein, Rav Yosef Eliyahu Henkin, etc., etc. I have a schut. So Meir I knew intimately. So when he goes to Howard Beach, got to remember I was getting smicha that year, a year later, So I read my book. I have all the details in Washington. So he goes to Howard Beach and he influences the children. And he gets the kids. The parents are boiling mad. Some of these kids now come home, demand that the home be kosher. Come the kids come home. We're not going to go in the car on Shabbos. You got to understand this, Moshe. You come from a frum home, so you don't comprehend. But put yourself in their place. The parents are furious. What do you mean? Yeah, I got to change the house. Then they take down the mechitza. Put up the mechitza, and the balabatim take it down and throw Meir Kahana out. But now I'll tell you something you don't know. One of the main balabatim who fought him bitterly, his kids became frum. The kids later make the family totally frum, and they go in Aliyah, and this guy who was instrumental in throwing Meir Kahana out becomes a great devotee of Meir and all his teachings. But you have to understand, for people it's shocking. They don't have any concept. I grew up in the Bronx, 700,000 plus Jews. If there were 10 Shomer Shabbos, I'm overstating the case. On the East Side, there was a bit of a concept. In Williamsburg, there was a... They have no concept. Their concept was religion. Whatever you do is good. You follow, you pay your nickel and take your choice. No concept. So people around me, people will maledict you. People will laugh at you. You know how many parents came to me over the decades? My son is a fanatic, you understand? Your son. So I always had a standard answer. I would say to the parents, tell me, do you care about Yiddishkeit? You're like, no, Rabbi, sure we care. I say, all right, so what are you complaining? Your son observes 120%. He's going to go out in the big world. Halavai, 100% will be left. Now he has to be a little bit more. But Reb Moshe Sternbach is so smart here, so insightful. Even if they maledict you, even if they curse you, keep the channels of communication open. All right, I can give many examples, but this is Reb Moshe Sternbach. See,
deal with the issue of inviting for Shabbos?
Yitzchak, if the Rebbe is taking this diversion, building up an overture, enjoy every minute, and then we'll get back to inviting for Shabbos, and you will be shocked. You understand? Take my word for it. Take my word for it. You will be shocked. All right, let me go one drop further. And here we touch upon, we'll just touch upon it now, we'll do a little bit more next week. See, so you're going to say to me, you're a Balcher, all right? So, you see, Baal Teshuva mentality, what about the children? How do I explain to my children that their grandparents are Mechallelei Shabbos, Ochlin, Nevelet, and Treifet, and they're not allowed? And he hits upon this problem. And here he says, if you have children, and they're Yeladim Ketanim, Banim Uvonot, ובבית הרב או משפחתו קיימת פריצות או טלוויזיה או מדברים ניבל פה או חס ושלום מדברים כנגד הדת. See, don't bring the kids there. And this is very interesting what he describes. Television. No, what's wrong with television? All right, you all understand movies today, the whole atmosphere. Midabrim benevil peh. Do you ever watch any of the TV programs? Every second word is four letters. It's beyond words. It's like you can't have a program. I was amazed. My grandchildren, I watched them growing up here. They knew every curse word in the English language. So they're good kids. I asked them, how do you know this? How do you know it? Well, they had the television there. Today it must be on the computer with computer games. There's no end. Medabrim neged hadat. All right, you understand? The grandparents say he's a fanatic. There's a word we grew up with. I don't like to use it. He's a chnuk. You've heard that word. They throw it at you all the time. He's a fanatic. He's this. He's that. I had here in this very kollel, there was once a kid here with payas, many kids with payas and black. and someone big from why you said to him, you'd be so valuable for us if you only get rid of the payers. You follow? And I told the kid, that's such a terrible thing to say. Everyone has a freedom to express his Torah concepts as he wishes. I show you, I have in my office now 6 different books and pamphlets from a Talmud of mine, why every Jew should have a beard. He's been chasing after me for decades. He's my Talmud out of the 60s from a New York yet. Reb Moshe Wiener, you've seen his volumes. And I have to give him an answer. He wants my opinion on chapter 17, the Litvisher Report. I'm going to answer. I'm not afraid to answer, Vic, believe me. But I love him. He doesn't give up on the Rebbe. Kol HaKavod, the beard. He's after Rabbeinu Tam Tefillin. Remember I gave out that pamphlet in class. Rabbeinu Tam Tefillin. Kol HaKavod. But please, they talk against religion. So you see, Reb Moshe Sternbuch is raising a very delicate issue here. How do you balance it out? On one hand, you don't want to cut off the parents. You don't want to cut off your relatives. On the other hand, it's very easy for me, a mature individual, I can go and deal with it. What about if I have little kids? I'm trying to educate them. Modani, Shema Yisrael, little kids. And these kids see, they have no... Inevitably, the kid is getting the message, freedom of choice, pluralism, no black and white answer. I'll take it further, Be'ezrat Hashem, next week. So now I want to ask a question. If I teach next Sunday, how many of you will be here? Can I see a show of hands?
Yes.
Chaim, why isn't your hand up? Why are you sitting there like a dummy?
I'm interviewing Be'ezrat.
For what?
Psychology.
Oh, sounds good to me. Be matzliach. Elliot, are you visiting here or what?
I'm living here for half a year.
You're living here for half a year, you say? What, are you half a Jew? How does it come to half a year?
My family's in America.
Your wife is here?
My wife is here.
Okay, Adam Veto, Baruch Hashem. Come with your wife next week. Did she study with me?
No.
Okay. All right, so we'll have class next. Yomo, you'll be here next week? Okay. We'll have class next week. So one second. I'm overwhelmed with material today. Tomorrow you'll see we're rolling. But let's just keep it solid. What did we do today? I would say we heard Reb Aaron Lichtenstein, and you can see a total different approach than Reb Moshe Feinstein. Down the line, I'll give you the exact source for Reb Shlomo Zalman Orbach. It's not Reb Aaron quoting Baal Peh. We actually have it in writing. So you see, it opens up a whole world. Am I happy with all this machloket? Again, I'm haunted by the fact we're being matir willy-nilly chilul Shabbos on Shabbos. On the other hand, if we're not matir, we're losing them all together. And there's no easy answer here. It's a question of flexibility and how to balance out the challenges of life. Rav Moshe Sternbuch, there's a whole medley of questions here that are just unbelievably fascinating that he had to deal with. And Shimon Aleph, we'll finish it up next week, and then we're going to go into questions that you won't believe your ears that he had to deal with. And here you have the impression of Moshe Sternbuch, Rav Tuvia Weiss, these people, Leidachare, did. All right, Rav Tuvia Weiss, I don't know if he's functioning today. But Rav Moshe Sternbuch went to America with one of the Satmarovs and spoke. And what? He's alive and kicking. But he's a multifaceted personality. On one hand, there's statement Satma. On the other hand, he can deal with the concept of a Baal Tshuva and television and radio and cursing and malediction and all that goes on in life and Tshuvat HaMishkal. Each topic here is a world of insight and halachic comprehension. What do you want? The Av Beitin of the Haredi? Not to be Haredi, but you should know in the Haredi world, Moshe will tell you if he knows the inside politics. In the Haredi world, he's viewed as a strange bird. If you follow me, he is Haredi, but he's a little bit too open-minded for the Haredi concepts. So you got to tell these. You see this tshuva? Very balanced. Okay? very balanced. Could you believe the Og Beitner, the other Chari did, is writing something like this? Don't leave your family. Look how he quotes Yitro, and he says, Kal v'chomer, Dotan is goyim, here are Jews. Yes, Moshe.
Didn't he also have a relationship with Rabbi Chiel Yaakov Weinberg at one point?
Yeah. Rabbi Chiel Yaakov Weinberg, Europe. He really was exposed to very open people compared Rabbi Dessler. Where does Rabbi Dessler, where does the Michtav Eliyahu come to Satma? You understand what I'm saying? But all right, freedom of choice. Freedom of choice. We'll leave it at that. Yitzchak, yes.
In the book of interview, where Sabato was interviewing Aaron Lichtenstein.
Right.
And Aaron Lichtenstein said he's not comfortable with the idea that all the secular Jews are Tinoch Shel Yisro.
Listen. There are secular Jews who certainly had an upbringing and should know better. But Bizman Hazeh, I would say we have to go with Tinoch Shel Yisro. We can't... there's so much going against Torah in the world today. Take this election campaign. Look at guns going to America, raised in a frum home, survivors from Hitler. He had basic chinuch mamlachti education, and he's telling the Reformed Jews, come and take over the Kotel. It's very sad. So there are a lot of factors here. I would rather go with Tinoch Shel Yisro. All right, but let Rav Aaron speak for himself and give examples. They're great people. When you quote Rav Sabato, when you quote Rav Aaron, you're quoting the greatest people in the world. My dear students, this is making the rounds on the internet. Pesach cleaning. Orthodox, $99. Conservative, $49. Reform, $9. So if anyone wants it, you're welcome. Here is, again, these tapes. No one is interested. This is from Wall Street to the Western Wall, Rabbi Yaron Ruvain. If anyone listens, I want you, it's two talks he gave. I don't know, they publicize it, must cost a penny to put this out. If I would hear these talks, I don't know, it wouldn't make me from, but I want some of your impressions. Ah, this is very interesting. I almost had a shaila that no one has discussed. I had a great-grandson who had a Brit in Tainat Esther. Imagine if the Brit would have fallen on Shushan Purim Friday, and the kids would have made the Brit, let's say in Haifa, where they live. I was very fortunate they made the Brit 2-minute walk from here in Givat Mordechai, and for the great-grandparents of this Rachanimo, it was a wonderful gift that we didn't have to go far. But Elliot, if the Brit is in Haifa on Shushan Purim, and I eat my Purim Suda in Haifa, am I Yotzei? No, think about it. Friday in Haifa is Ice Purim. Hankus Purim, Magnus Les, give me a nickel and vaf me a rice. It's out. Purim is over. But I have a Chiyuv. I was in Yerushalayim. I heard the Megillah Purim morning. Then I flew to Haifa, or I flew to Rehovot, where my granddaughter-in-law's parents live. No? Anyway, here's a whole article Yitz Rubin sent me, defining residence for Purim. Doesn't deal with the problem. Very interesting, but deals with many problems. Elliot was here, and he left for Tel Aviv. Elliot, you go to Tel Aviv on Thursday, you go to Tel Aviv, you go to Yerushalayim on Thursday, you stay here, and Friday you went to Tel Aviv. Did you have a Purim or you didn't have a Purim? Think about it. You're a leftist guy. Purim, a terrible holiday. We killed non-Jews. Don't want to celebrate. Thursday Yerushalayim, Friday Tel Aviv. All right. Here, my dear Talmud Rabbi Yeshua Grinstein, who heads up Rabbi Riskin's program for Rabbanim, here is, I'll talk about it tomorrow, they just had a conference in Venice. I just missed it by a week. And he deals with Rabbi Moshe Feinstein. Hamitbolel, the Mishnatol Shel Rav Malv, its sources of Rabbi Moshe Feinstein. He deals with the tshuva I quoted last week. You don't know what's going on now in New York. Baruch Hashem, it helps Aliyah. Don't let ultra-Orthodox yeshivas get away with this. A judge must rule for the state as it seeks to ensure basic educational equivalence in non-public schools. It's really serious. they're now challenging the state that's forcing the yeshiva to teach kids 2 and 2 is 4, not 22. And now they're going to court to try to fight the state. And these are former Satmar kids who are fighting, enforce the law they should learn here. God have mercy what we're at. These are kids who claim they're both boy and girl, and it's about a temple in Brooklyn that just made a B'nai Mitzvah. It's for kids turning 13. They have a Bar Mitzvah and a Bat Mitzvah at the same time because they have both sexual concepts. Guts are up hitting where we're at, and then he get away with it. This is a beautiful story. The biggest distributor of beer in the New York area on the East Coast is a Jew that wanted to have nothing to do with Yiddishkeit, and he created tremendous problems for Yeshiva Buckram, who loves beer. I don't know, I see everyone loves beer. I have no taste for beer. I don't know, I'm lacking in my yeshiva training. But they love beer, and he refused to sell the chametz, and now you have a distributor, Jewish, and what do you do with beer after Pesach? And Chabad got hold of him gradually, and all his chametz are sold, and the person who certifies the sale, wait till you see the picture, is Reb David Feinstein. There is Reb David Feinstein. There is Reb David Feinstein. I know Reb David Feinstein. He knows me. There's Reb David Feinstein. And now you can understand why Reb David Feinstein is not a member of Matzah Gedolei Torah, because he's different. He's not an Agudist who follows party line. He can deal with Chabad as well. The elegance of the spirit. This is a kid who goes to the Rebbe and tells the Rebbe off. You got to see. And the patience the Rebbe has with him going back to 1955. And again, the flexibility of the Rebbe is unbelievable. This I can't give away yet, I need it. This is a Sphera chart for each day of Sphera. The New York Yankees, New York Giants, Brooklyn Dodgers, New York Mets, all Jewish Hall of Fame. Number, who had number one? Who had number two? In other words, you can keep track of your Sphera with the ball players, the greats of all these teams, right down the line from 1 to 49. Unbelievable. Okay? Now, this Yitz take from Michael Miller. This is a preview of the season that has just begun with pictures of the ball players, their uniforms, anyone who grew up loving baseball outside of Boston, but Michael grew up in Philadelphia. Take this for him. This is a memoir. It's 50 years since the New York Mets won the World Series, 1969, the year of my Aliyah. I celebrate 50 years in Israel, and this is a salute to two of their great ball players, Gil Hodges and Tom Seaver. Very interesting. This is also for Michael. Larry Bear, how did Jews get into such trouble is beyond me. San Francisco Giants chief executive officer suspended by Major League Baseball. Do you know why? He beat the hell out of his wife in public. Unbelievable. Take that. This I have to tell you, my grandson is all excited. My grandson plays with the computer, you know, these kids, that's their life. And he shows me an interview with Donald Trump, the great president of the United States, Cyrus III. Shows me an interview with him from the mid-80s. Young Donald Trump, up-and-coming businessman. And right behind his head is the plaque and the middle plaque, the one he's proud of Eitz Chaim, a beautiful plaque to Donald. It may be the synagogue that his father built, and who knows, because it's not clear, but I couldn't believe it, and my grandson is so proud, and I said, you see, your Sabu called him Cyrus III. I have a reason why. Eitz Chaim Hilamacha Zikimba. To all my students, first of all, we should only have Besara Tovet Yeshut V'Nechamot. It's, you got to give credit to the Israeli army, you got to give credit to our politicians, you got to give credit to where our tax money goes. I have another grandson telling me, oh, I love this, my Feiglin, he's going to lower taxes. I said, my dear grandson, I hope you're right, but a son who's lived more than 80 years, every politician promises to lower taxes, but here overnight we have to go to war, we have to do this, we have to do that, it's all gone and forgotten. Vote for whom you want. But I wouldn't vote for Michael Feiglin for that reason. That yesterday he already told me he's going to vote for my ticket. But all right. In Baruch Hashem, tomorrow Be'ezrat Hashem, I wouldn't miss the class for all the beautiful Hamintash that passed hands on this past Purim, both here and across the Jewish world. Very fascinating material. And who we meet again? Health and happiness. Das Vedanya. By the way, I'm speaking in West Hempstead today. See the miracles of modern times? There's a parlor meeting in West Hempstead to report on all that happened with the ladies we brought over from Odessa, Ukraine. And Yomo recorded me last week, and they told me from America, wonderful. So the highlight of the parlor meeting will be yours truly addressing them while he's asleep in Yerushalayim HaKodesh. Go to, do me a favor, Jack, just turn it off. Can you reach it? Okay, how are your feet?
The same.
Same. How are your feet, Vic?
Oh, good.
You're better? And I have an appointment with the doctor to start the process of getting Suliot again, Tuesday.
Appointment for
that? Suliot, what do you call them in English? Arches.
No.
I used to have professionally made, because shoulders not help. If I'm sure what happened to my feet now, what's helping me, it's from Teva, Na'ot Teva, the shoes made here. I took out what they put in, and I'm using it. It's fabulous. But I want something professional, because I see this is starting... It's made out of cheap something. It's falling away.
Anyway, you probably have to have them made every couple of years.
Yeah, yeah. That's why I've had the arches since 50 years already, 40 years. But I used shawl afterwards, and now it's not helping me. That's not good enough.
I remember this from last year.
Who did that?
I don't know.
Oh, 1 second. Chaim.
How many pages is the Rav Lichtenstein shir?
How many what?
How many pages?
Well, what I, it's 17, 18, but I just copied the heart of what I need.
Ah, okay.
It's these are the ones that I've actually for you.
If anyone wants a copy.
Oh, yeah, I was very interested in that.
You're interested? You got it.
Did you just give me a SOA?
I am.
Oh,
thank
you so much.
It's a good book. It's worth it.
Yeah, I need to... I read... Have you ever read Off the Derech?
Of course.
Is it like a similar type of...
No, it's
idea, but...
flipping out. Yeah.
Right. No, I know it's like the opposite, but it's like similar...
Rabbarin quotes Off the Derech.
Oh, yeah?
He says, yeah, read it.
He quotes that book?
Yeah.
What was the name of the talk? It's on BBM.
1 second. Okay, 1 second. Let me not get confused.
I read the tshuva of Rav Sternbach on inviting people to Shabbos.
Well, we'll get there. I'm leaning into it because...
He has a chiddush about the Knei Iver there.
I'm getting into it.
Yeah.
No, he has a big chiddush.
Right.
Here's Rav Aaron's talk.
Parenting and children after there. Can I take pictures of the pages?
Whatever you want. I can reprint it to you. What's the name?
Dov Carroll's.
Hi, where are you?
I was wondering if you thought you mentioned about the, you know, how Bali Chuba reviews. So I've heard it.
If you're reading Makar Rishon, it's one of the real problems in the Haredi world.
So I heard in the name of a prominent YU Rosh Yeshiva that he recommends and tells, you know, people not to marry Bali Shuva or converts. And I wanted to believe that there was something specific, you know, some specific circumstance. So I had occasion to ask him personally. And the only thing he said was, why should a boy settle for, you know, someone with the...
Yeah, but how can you talk like that?
He thought practically it makes difficulty with the in-laws. He thought it wasn't...
Life has difficulty.
I mean, from families also don't have perfect families.
Of course.
Transformed his or her life.
I'll tell you, in South Africa, I'll tell you something interesting. In South Africa, Johannesburg, 90% of the Krim Jews, which is a very large part of the population, are Balei Tshuva. So in the Chevra Kadisha, I remember the head of it told me, I'm FFB, but we made a rule in the Chevra Kaddish, you have to be free for 10 years before we allow you. If you show me Shabbos 10 years. All right, that I can understand. But what you're dealing with is a very delicate issue. If a girl becomes a Bala Tshuva, she's 21, she became from 16, 17, what's wrong with marrying her?
So how does Shuvi like, feel you relate to, meaning, like there was, I asked, you know, there was no halachic basis given, it was not a... anything performed on that. It was just. So how do like you respect the, still maintain the same level of respect in that?
Listen, I don't understand what the Rosh Yeshiva, but people have viewpoints. No two of us think alike. So you can't get upset. But I don't agree. 100% don't agree. I've seen Bala Tshuva. What they there was a guy in the Kollel, John Fisher. I taught him. I taught his sisters years ago. Then I got to know his family. His mother was teaching with his grandmother, right? They were, and the grandmother saw that this lady was really something. And she said, I want you to meet my son. All right? The son was a Shomer Shabbos. The mother knew nothing about Yiddishkeit. She said, Tzadeket.
Meaning they weren't meeting for the purposes of dating.
No, meeting, I want you to date him. I want you to, she said, this girl has something in her.
But she wasn't religious yet?
But she didn't know what to think about Yiddishkeit. Not that she wasn't religious. Tinok shinishpa, tinok. She said, so take it today. Raised four from kids. Endless grandchildren from. Well, come on. So I don't know. What that Rosh Yeshiva said, I'm not responsible for, but I certainly don't agree. If someone just became a Baal Tshuva yesterday, all right, you got to wait and see.
Yeah.
But someone, I remember in Michala, one of the things that frightened me about Rabbi Koopman, he had no understanding of Kalbach. I'm not a Kalbach, but there are people who need that type of outlook, the singing, the joy. You look at Breslov, no? What are you going to say, brother? You got to be happy. You see? To me, you want to be a Jew, you got to learn Shas and Paiskim. But not everyone can be like that. Understand that? That's why Steinbach's Jew is very good. That flexibility. But all right, this Rosh Yeshiva, maybe you got to know his own background. Maybe you have to know family. You understand there may be reasons why. The Rav wouldn't talk like that. That's absolutely sure. Rabbi Lichtenstein wouldn't talk like that.
Yeah.
You see the way Rabbi is. Word by word, I couldn't make it up. This is Rabbi Sprach. It's his lesson. Understand? There are just a few words in there that I didn't use because I don't know what they mean. That's Rabbi.
It's like 8 pages, it seems. Or is it...
Whatever I... turned off.
Mm-hmm. Well, fine.